In education, one of the things that teachers are oftentimes taught to do is to teach their students to predict. So I want you to look at the statement that's on the board. I want you to make a prediction about what's coming next. As you think about this statement, this person's religion is worthless. Maybe your prediction would be that a picture is about to come. And this picture would somehow depict someone who maybe was bowing down to an idol. Maybe here's someone who is Buddhist and they have their statue of Buddha there and they're bowing down to it. Or maybe you would predict that there's going to be a man who's on his rug and he's kneeling down facing to the east. What would your prediction be? Well, if you're familiar with the book of James, it might be a very different idea than what's expressed. Because this is actually the last part of a verse of James, in which James says this: if anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. I want you for just a minute to take note of what James is saying. Because James has a very uncanny way of taking complex biblical ideas and putting them down in terms that you and I can very easily understand, and using examples of things that we can very easily understand. And whereas in our minds, when we hear someone's religion is worthless, we're thinking idolatry, we're thinking about bowing to the wrong God, we're thinking about something along these lines, whereas James comes along and he says, if you can't control your tongue, your religion is worthless. This morning, I want us to talk about this idea in asking ourselves this question: is my religion worthless? As James would look at me, as God looks at me, and he sees the things that I'm doing, more importantly from this passage, as he sees the things that are within my heart, what is he saying about my light? What's he saying about my influence within the world? And so I want us to take this passage and to come to a correct assessment in each of our lives as far as the answer to this question. But let's begin with some basic information. As we think about James' wording here, the term religion, actually this tense of the verb, is the only place in the New Testament where it's used. And as we look at the idea, James is actually using a word that applies to the outward aspects of religion. What we might think, as lack of a better term, the idea of ceremony within our religion. And so as he brings out this point, he's going to say that a religion that is solely based on this is wrong. In fact, the point that James is going to make is that any right religion, any religion that God views as being correct in His sight, is a religion that is interested and concentrated on the God respect of obedience. Here's what James is saying. You cannot rely simply on what's on the outside. You cannot say that if I get the ceremony right, that if I get the outward aspects right, everything is okay in my religion. And what's interesting about that is I believe James hits at one of the most difficult parts of religion. And that's the idea of not just simply concentrating on what can be seen, but to actually look deep within its heart and to understand whether or not there is that respect for God that's shown in obedience. I'll say this about this passage. James could have used any host of examples here. James could have picked out many different ideas, but the point that he's going to use to illustrate this is actually control of the tongue. Again, let me restate that. James could have used any number of examples. What he is not doing is saying this: well, if you can control your tongue, everything's okay with your religion. If you've got it under control, everything's all right. But instead, what he's doing is he's picking out one thing to illustrate the point. That if you say that you are religious, that if you say that you have this religion deep within you as it ought to be, James tells us one of the areas where this is going to be illustrated is in the words that you speak, the ideas that you express. This seems to be a topic very near to James. I don't know if there was a problem there with the group of people to whom he was writing. If this was a group that was having real difficulty in this area, or if this was something, and I suspect probably the latter here, if this was something that James looked upon Christians and he said, here is something that we all need to deal with. So let's talk about his example for just a minute. Why was it that he chose the example of the tongue? Well, I believe he answers that later within his book. As he talks about the idea of the tongue and the control of it, he says, first of all, I want everybody to understand that this is a challenge that all men and women face. Let's look over to James chapter 3. This passage, I suppose, is one of the best passages to come to understand the challenges of correct speech, the things that are proceeding from the heart. And as we look in verse 2, he says, we all stumble in many things. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. And then in verse 4, he says, look at the ships. Though they are so large and are driven by the winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. And he goes on to say in verse 5, so the tongue is a small member that boast great things. James is saying to us, in equestrian terms here, when you think about your tongue, it's something everybody's got to bridle. It's something everybody's got to think about so that they are not saying the wrong things. It's a challenge for everyone. And he then goes on to say, it's a challenge because the tongue can create all kinds of evil. Look on down to verses 5 and 6. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire, and the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is so set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. That's strong language. James is saying if we are not careful, we allow the words that we speak to originate with the devil himself. That we are speaking evil things that will bring others down. That's why this is so serious. And he goes on further to say that it reveals who we really are. If you look in verse 9, with it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. He's saying it reveals who you are. And if on the one hand you are saying something nice about God, and on the other hand you're cursing your brother, what he's saying is you have a hypocritical heart. You can see that. You can understand. And we understand with this point that it was recognized by Jesus himself. Because Jesus earlier said, do you not see that whatever goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is expelled? But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles a person. Jesus Christ himself says, what someone speaks is a good indication of what's going on in the heart. What one is saying is a good indication of the thought process that's going on. So we look at that idea, and we understand that an unbridled tongue tells us a whole lot about a heart. An unbridled tongue is saying that the heart is not restrained, that it's not kept in bounds, that it's not that pure religion that we're to have. And in so many areas, we see it coming out. We turn to a book like Proverbs, and we read all of those passages about gossiping and backbiting, and we understand it's wrong, and we understand it's ungodly. But how easy is it to allow that bridle to slip and to start talking about people and to start talking about situations of which we have no business discussing? That's why James is saying this is a sign of your religion. We think about lying, how easy it is if the truth is going to get us into trouble to try to make up something, to try to say something that's going to get us out of that. And every time what happens, we find ourselves getting in even deeper, don't we? We think about perhaps just a very generic phrase of corrupt communication. I believe that would cover many things. The words that we speak that are wrong, the cursings that we speak, the profanities that could be used. But I think it can also just mean using your communication in a very corrupt kind of way. I got rather amused recently at a ball game I was at. There was a foul that occurred that was an obvious foul that the referee missed. And all of a sudden, there was a mother standing on her feet and at the top of her lungs yelling at this ref. And her child said, "Mom, sit down." I had never been as proud of that child as I was at that moment, because she realized this was not right. Now, that child may have also been experiencing some embarrassment in that by a parent behaving like that. But yet it's that kind of communication that I believe James is talking about also. The idea where we are saying things, they're not curse words, they're not lies, they're not gossip, but they are inappropriate. They are not bespeaking one who has Christ within the heart. They're not bespeaking one who is seeking to live peaceably with all men. And James says, if we do not have that kind of control, we must look at our religion and understand that we are showing signs that our heart is unrestrained. And I might add just one more. And that's entering into religious discussions with no knowledge of what we're talking about. So many times we want to argue religion, but we don't want to take the time to figure out what we're arguing. That's vain. That's worthless kind of speech where we're trying to convince someone of something that maybe we've heard all of our lives, but it's not a part of our beliefs. We've never come to have faith in it. We're simply just trying to win a point. So what's James's idea here? It's the point that we are not in control, that our actions do not conform with the standards of God. But he goes on in this verse. And as he's speaking here about the ideas of this worthless religion, we'll note once again, he says in verse 26, if anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his heart. That word deception shows up several times here in this opening section of James. And I believe what we come across here is perhaps the most frightening part of this passage, where James is saying you can so deceive yourself by thinking that you've got the outward right, that you've got the ceremony correct, that you can be so good at that you can actually deceive your own heart, that you can convince yourself that everything is okay, that everything is right within your life. And that puts us in a very dangerous, dangerous situation. Because if we begin to rely on the outward action as proof that everything is okay, we become a whole lot like a group of folks in the Bible that we oftentimes turn to for a very good example of a very bad example. I want you to note with me over in Matthew chapter 23. As the Lord here spoke to the Pharisees and perhaps one of the fieriest sermons within the Bible, listen to what he says to them. And let's relate it to the point James is making. Where he says in verse 25, "Woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside are full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the plate, and the outside also may be clean. Woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. So you also outwardly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." The Lord is saying here, It's easy to look good on the outside. And if you are only concerned about looking good on the outside, your religion is worthless. And so James takes the idea that the Lord has here, he speaks it again in a little bit different terms, where he says, let me give you an example of this. If you can't control your speech, you may just be that plate, that cup, that whitewashed tomb that on the outside appears okay, but on the inside is full of uncleanness. And so James says that if we are not in control, we have not conformed to the standards of God, and thus our religion may very well be worthless. But let's take that a step further. We've got to realize that point. You and I have got to examine who we are, and we must realize that if we are undisciplined in our religion, if we are undisciplined in what we believe, in what we practice, that God is saying to us in very clear, very stark, very attention-getting terms, you need to realize what I think about what you're doing. And to come to grips with that. And to make the changes that are necessary. So, we don't want to be that way. We don't want to be a people who have a worthless religion. What we want to be is a people whose religion is pure. Who, that is, God looks upon both our inward and our outward thoughts and actions. He looks at us and He says, your religion is what I want it to be. So James once again is going to choose an illustration for us, one of many that could be chosen, to illustrate, here is the idea of a religion that is alive and a religion that is active. Let's go ahead on back to James chapter 1. And as we go further into this passage, in verse 27, he says, religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Just as James chose one example among many to illustrate the point of worthless religion, so James chooses one example among many to illustrate a pure religion. He chooses the ideas of the care for widows and orphans. As we consider this point, it should be of no real surprise to us that James would choose it. If you look throughout the Bible, these are two of the four groups that God has oftentimes said people are to be caring for. When He talks about the stranger and the poor and the widow and the orphan, these are four groups that God has said from the beginning, I want you to make sure that they're cared for, because these are groups that God cares for. I want you to think about a passage that we find over in Psalm 68 and verse 5, where the psalmist says, Father of the fatherless and protector of widows is God in His holy habitation. Isn't that an interesting depiction of God? We oftentimes think about all of these grand terms for Him, and we need to. His holiness and His greatness and His power. And here God tells us about Himself, that I watch for those who are orphans, and I watch for those who are widows. And as God says this, He says, when you do so, this is an imitation of Me. That as you care for these people, what you're doing is you're imitating what I would have you to do. And the point is made here in James, that the only way that we can see the need to do this kind of thing as a part of our religion is to make sure that we are pure and to make sure that we're holy. And that's an idea that does not come up first in James. Actually, some of you may be quite familiar with this after the past few weeks of study. We look back to the book of Isaiah, and we find that Isaiah says something very similar in chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, when he says, wash yourselves, Make yourselves clean. Remove the evil of the deeds from before my eyes. Cease to do evil. There's the cleansing. Learn to do good. Here's the purity. Seek justice. Correct oppression. Bring justice to the fatherless. Plead the widow's cause. Isn't that interesting? Once again, we find where God is saying, you've got to get rid of the filth, you've got to get rid of the wickedness, you've got to get rid of the worthlessness, and then you must be proactive in the sense that you're going to do the things that are good. Isn't that the point of James? Be doers of the word and not hearers only. Take what you know is right and put it into action. And certainly that's what we see here as we look at what James is telling us. And so, as we consider this point, it's an illustration to us that if our religion is pure and our religion is what it needs to be, we are caring for others, especially those who have no ability to repay us. We think about first century widows and orphans. And here was a group of people who were in terrible need. Here were people who had lost their source of income, the mainstay in the household economically, and they needed the care of others. And while in the 21st century, perhaps not quite as severe as then, there are still problems that need to be helped with from those who experience this kind of loss. And so as James illustrates the concept of pure religion, he says, you make sure that you are caring for widows and orphans and by extent anyone who is in need. That's an example of what's in your heart. I also want us to understand that James is saying this about our brethren. You go over to chapter 2 and he broadens the point, doesn't he? In verse 15, when he says, if a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled without giving them the things that are needed for the body, what good is that? The whole idea. If you put this passage with the end of chapter 1, verse 27, what you're seeing is a religion of action, a religion of doing, a religion from taking good things in the heart and converting those into good things for others. That's the point that James would like for us to see. And this is our work. It's a personal test of pure religion. I was having a discussion once about the work of the church and had not even brought up James 1:27, a young man who I guess I believe felt like he knew a lot more than anyone else in the room, kind of got this look on his face, and in a rather condescending voice said, well, widows and orphans must be cared for. And who's going to care for them if the church doesn't? That misses the entire point of this verse. James 1:27 is not talking about the work of a local church. James 1:27 is not talking about collective action. James 1:27 is saying, here is a test of your faith. What you do as a Christian, and how easy and how often we allow ourselves to take such things and to cast them off to someone else. But James says this is a test of the purity of your relationship with the Lord. And we need to understand that point. But he doesn't quite stop there. He goes on with this concept of pure religion, and he says not only is it visiting widows and orphans in their affliction, but he says it's also keeping oneself unstained or unspotted from the world. What James is saying in this is that we are distinct people. We are a peculiar people in the sense that we are set apart for the work of God. And as a part of that pure religion, it means that we make sure that we don't allow ourselves to become stained by what the world would have us to do. We don't follow the world's value system. I don't know if any of you are like me and are paint magnets. If I get anywhere around wet paint, it's going to be on me. I don't know how it happens, but it's going to be on me. And so what I have found is that if I am in my non-painting clothes, I stay away. I stand back. I don't get close. Can I suggest to you that should be our same approach with the world? We're in it, but yet we're not of it. We are not close to the standards, the values that the world lays down. And the reason for that is because these values are in a constant sense of change. We're constantly seeing the world changing its values. We look at issues that are in the news now and we see how quickly that can happen. God, however, has a system that does not change. And I'll remind us that as we look at the book of Malachi, at what God says to the people then, He tells them in flat-out terms, "For I, the Lord, do not change." He makes the point to them, that's the only reason you're still around, is because I'm patient and I'm merciful. God's system does not change. So if our religion is pure, our standards are God's. And if our standards are God's, it means that we are staying away from those things that would be unlike Him. Consider what 2 Peter 3:14 tells us when he says, "Therefore, beloved, since you are waiting for these, be diligent to be found by Him without spot or blemish and at peace." That's what the Lord is seeking for us. So, how does this then allow us to see that our religion is pure? How does this show us that we are the kind of people that God desires, that what we're doing is right? Well, it's very easy, isn't it? It shows that we trust in God. It shows that we are practicing what we profess. The things that we say are right are evident within our lives. James is saying you're doers and you're not hearers only. And in that same vein, it illustrates that we're genuine. It illustrates that we are not a people who are concerned about some outward reputation. It shows that we are not a people who are simply concerned about what somebody may think about us. We're not a people who practice religion just simply to keep family members or others off our backs. We are the Lord's. I would tie that into another passage that Peter delivers to us on a different topic, but similar approach. When he says, "In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." You see, that's where the genuineness comes out. When the Lord returns, the testing is over. When the Lord returns, the time that we've had on this earth to prove ourselves is done. And the ones that will be welcomed home are those who are pure in their religion, who have practiced what they believe. And they will find that the Lord will say, "There's a place by my side for those who are genuine." And so in these short verses, James has ushered in such a challenge for us. He has said to us that when you think about your life, you must look very seriously and soberly and determine the answer to this question: is your religion genuine? And as we look at the examples that he uses, plus others that could be used here, that question must be answered honestly. And so in light of everything that we've discussed this morning, I ask you, as I ask myself to do, is to answer that question. And as you look at the things that you say, and the illustration that James uses, or as you think about the things that you do, the visiting of widows and orphans as James uses here, or as in other things, to ask yourself where you stand. Oftentimes in our middle class bubble, we can fail to see the needs of others. And we can allow our religion to pretty much be confined to this room. James says that's unacceptable. James says you are to be a doer and not a hearer only.